this idea of asking questions that cause you and others to go explore something that you wouldn't have otherwise explored has been the kind of engine of creativity for throughout human history. Many of the famous leaders that we look at, if you actually study them, you realize what they're not doing is coming up with answers. What they are doing is asking the bold question.
Welcome to the IDOU Creative Confidence Podcast, a series focused on building your confidence at work to tackle your biggest creative challenges.
Join us as we learn insights and lessons straight from IDEO and today's most impact-oriented design thinking leaders.
Hi, I'm Suzanne Gibbs Howard.
And I'm Kalita Stafford.
So today, I have here with me Tim Brown.
Hello.
He is the CEO of IDEO, and we have tea together from time to time to talk about various topics. Tim's definitely a thought leader in creativity and leadership in the modern workplace. He's also created a course with us called Leading for Creativity. And so today, what we wanted to talk about was creative leadership and how to ask better questions and be a better creative leader. So just to give you a little nugget of his course with us, Tim came to us and we started creating a course that's about the fact that the world is changing so fast. Technology, globalization, politics, forces in the marketplace are shifting. Startups, any business can be disrupted at any time. And so old school models of leadership are not really enough anymore. So leadership that's top down, that's command and control, that's about efficiencies and operations. And so we've started to talk about creative leadership, right, which Tim has defined as generating, embracing, and executing upon bold ideas, even when the path is unclear. And at the center of that is asking questions as a means to lead. But we wanted to start off this morning with a little bit from Tim about why are questions important to you in the way that you lead?
Well, you know, our old existing assumptions of leadership are that leadership is a directive activity, right? That you're telling people what to do, that you're making decisions. The problem with a complex world in which you're asking as much of your organization as possible to be creative and innovative is that if you think as a leader you should or can have all the answers, then you're both wrong and significantly constraining the capacity of the organization to be creative. Right? So if we default to our old behaviors of I wait for a team to come to me expecting me to have the answer and me to have the decision, then it leads us down a path which is just not productive enough or creative enough. So we need to replace that with something. The most effective way that I've seen it work is to replace the idea of having the right answer with having the right question.
Mm-hmm.
And there are other reasons why that works. I mean, not only does it stop you assuming you have to have the answer, it leaves the space for the individual or the team that you're working with to express their own creativity, their own innovation. But also the thing that teams are often least good at is knowing how ambitious to be, or even knowing where to look. And what you do have as a leader is perspective. And so if you are thoughtful and can offer the right kinds of questions, then you can help teams look in the right place and you can help give them perspective. And it's a very powerful form of leadership.
And I also love the idea that you're enabling people to step into something more ambitious, which is so hard. So we know when we're leading today in the modern workplace, we need to take on appropriate levels of risk, always hard to manage, but I think most people are risk averse.
Yep.
Most people are afraid of failing, especially in the face of their leader. And so when you invite them in with a question, you're enabling.
Yep. And we use this metaphor of the explorer, right? That you know, if we look back on history, many of the people that we celebrate are in fact people who asked really difficult and big questions. And they were essentially questions of exploration, whether it's, you know, the Vasco da Gama or any of the great explorers that headed off across the ocean, not knowing what was at the other
side,
what was over
the
horizon,
yeah.
Exactly. Or even great scientists who explored through their work, not knowing where that exploration was going to take them. Some of those explorers, like Marie Curie, did it in a way that ultimately would cost her life, right? Because she was exploring in a very dangerous space of radioactivity. But this idea of asking questions that cause you and others to go explore something that you wouldn't have otherwise explored has been the kind of engine of creativity throughout human history.
And we see such great examples in the modern world, like with Google X and AstroTeller, and moonshots are essentially great, big, bold questions that teams are asking and answering together.
Exactly. I mean, many of the famous leaders that we look at, if you actually study them, you realize what they're not doing is coming up with answers. What they are doing is asking the bold questions. Yeah.
And so when you're sitting there on a day and you're trying to figure out what is the next bold question, or you're facing a challenge and you're trying to orient yourself and figure out where the questions are, what are some of the things that you do?
Well, one thing I try not to do is sit on my own with a blank sheet of paper. I find that leads to rather mundane questions, if any questions at all. There's nothing less stimulating than a blank sheet of paper. And I find there's nothing much less stimulating than my own companies. I find my best questions come when I'm in a context where I'm essentially being stimulated by new information, right? So that works really well with other people when you're exploring something, when you're discussing something. It works really well when you're in a new place that you've never been before, where you're noticing things that you haven't noticed before. I mean, obviously, there's a very close relationship between asking questions and curiosity.
Yes.
Right. I mean, they're kind of two sides of the same coin. I mean, the questions are simply expressions of your curiosity. And curiosity comes when your brain is stimulated to wonder why. Why is this like this? Or what happens when I do this? This is cliched, but young children are literally programmed to be curious because it is the most effective way that nature has found of us learning.
Yeah.
Right. And so we learn through curiosity. And that's why young children are programmed to constantly ask questions. And those questions lead to learning. And we lose that as we get older, partly because evolution decided that there comes a moment when we've learned most of the things we need to learn, and so that we go to a different phase. We go, for instance, to a phase where we start to build social networks, and we build ourselves, and that becomes very important, and that's what puberty and being a teenager is all about, that painful moment.
One of the things that you shared with me before was that you'll ask why in order, there's a classic thing that people say, the five whys with design. Keep poking and asking why, and what does that... I know that you have more nuanced ways of doing it than just saying why.
Well, no, I think that should be going on inside your head all the time, even if it's not. Because it's all about what are the implications of what I'm seeing or what I'm learning. What does it reveal? It should reveal a new question, and then that should reveal a new question. And I think it's instead of what we tend to assume about creative people, which is what they're doing is leaping for solutions all the time. They're leaping for answers. Again, the best leap for questions, because the deeper you go, the less obvious the question you get to, far more likely the idea that ultimately results is going to be more creative. But one of the things we're trying to do when we're trying to design is we're trying to reveal needs that really need to be met.
Mm-hmm.
They're never obvious. I mean, you know this. This has been your life's work, right? That in order to dig down deep enough to understand people and then their interactions well enough to understand what they need, you have to keep asking why.
Yeah.
Why do we say this? Why do we do this? Why do we react this way? Why do we live our lives this way? Why do we do this after this after this? And it's only as you dig down into that and start to understand and reveal things, you start to see perhaps needs that are not being met.
Another thing that you shared with us is that we talk about a lot is getting a question at the right altitude. And so I wonder if you could share what that means in your world.
Well, I mean, obviously, we use questions all the time in all of our worlds, right? I mean, it's a useful tool for human beings. But there are different kinds of questions, and there are questions you can ask that are interesting but so abstract that you're unlikely ever to get to a concrete solution. And of course, our job as innovators, as designers, is to get to something concrete at the end, right? That can change the world in some way. And so if your question is something that forces you to stay abstract, stay in the world of ideas, then it's a bit too high level. Right? Equally, you can ask questions that are so low level that the answer is already obvious, or at least the exploration is going to be narrow and likely one that lots of other people have perhaps already explored in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, you're unlikely to get to anything that's very significant.
The and best, not inspiring for your team.
It's not inspiring for your team. No. It's likely to be incremental. You've probably already implied what the answer is. And so, those questions can still be useful. And they're often subsets of bigger questions. So you often have, but there's a middle level. Like, there are so many things, when we're using judgment,
yeah.
That kind of mid level, it's neither too high level nor too low level, but just right. It's enough scope to allow creative exploration, surprising, unexpected creative exploration, but low enough to help both define a space that's manageable to explore, and secondly, indicate in what direction to go for outcomes that are likely to be tangible.
Yeah, we've got a couple. This one's such a hard concept, and it's so relevant to a particular moment in time and where you are in a challenge. We do so much work in the world of education.
Yeah, exactly.
And you could think about what is the future of our education system. That just kind of locks everybody up and sends you into a downward existential crisis spiral. Or you could think about really, really particular things.
Right, exactly.
So I think with the work that we did starting off with Innova Schools, it was really at this right level that it was specific to the context of the middle class in Peru.
Right.
It was specific enough to the kind of outcome you wanted. And so it's just, and it was in the early part of that challenge.
Right. Well, here, for instance, what was nice about, you can think about the first version of the question, though, what's the future of our education system? You've no idea who your users are. They could be the whole planet, right? Yeah. So how are you going to take 6-7 billion people and understand? Whereas with the version that's just right, we know our market's going to, our users are going to be kids and parents of middle class rising middle class families in Latin America, in Peru, even. So we can go and understand context. We can understand the state of that, of the education system in Peru. We can understand the state economically of families in Peru and understand what's important to them. It's still a big question, right?
Yeah.
There's still millions of people who fall into this category, but it's defined enough that we can go and do some work that allows us to move forward.
Yeah. And we call that the Goldilocks principle. So it's not too hot, not too cold, just right. And so,
one thing I would say that's worth remembering, there is value to these high-level questions. And I wouldn't say, let's never ask a high-level question. But what you do with those questions is you hold them over long periods of time. Mm-hmm. So we hold the question, what's the future of education at IDEO? We've held it for 10 years, and we will probably hold it for another 10 years and another 10 years after that. We're constantly interested in what the future of education is. But that's not a design brief. That's not a brief to go give a team. It's a question for you to hold. I'm always interested in what the future of education is going to be, and I'll always look for opportunities to explore that and study that.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are some of these high-level questions are ones that are valuable, but they're valuable to hold through perhaps multiple projects or even over many, many years.
I think that's something that's really the artfulness of being a creative leader, is holding those big, bold questions for the long haul, but then also being able to converge on the right question at the right level for the moment that it
exactly. seems. Exactly. I mean, there's a relationship, actually. Another idea we think about a lot of ideas is this idea of purpose. And these high-level questions are often what drives purpose. It's sort of trying to answer high-level questions like, what's the future of education, is what provides purpose for many organizations.
Mm-hmm. So at IDEOU, since we are a learning platform, we love learning as much from all of you as you're hopefully learning with and through us. And so questions are huge. So we had one from James in advance talking about the challenge of unconsciously telegraphing the answer that you want in your question. So are there things that you do to keep your self-awareness at the right level so that you're not directing people too much?
We all have unconscious biases and aspirations that we telegraph through. I mean, we can't help it. I would say two things. Firstly, culturally, whatever question you share with a team you want them to think about needs to be done in such a way that they've got the right to challenge that question and come back with their own biases, but their own points of view about it, right? You have to be open enough as a leader to have not only the answers be surprising, but the question be challenged.
Yeah.
And, our own experience at IDEO is that I think we have a lot of these moments with our clients where they get a little bit tense because we're coming back and saying, actually, we think the question was the wrong question, or we've evolved the question a little bit. As we've learned more, we realize the question perhaps ought to be slightly different. And that, you know, that's difficult for people to manage, because they think, you know, we're on a route, we're on a journey, and we know what the journey is, and now suddenly the journey is a different journey. But you need that openness and flexibility. So as a leader, that's important. And again, I think if you get that kind of Goldilocks question right, even if you are implying some things, there's enough space there for the team still to be creative about it, yeah, and to generate, yeah, some. Because your goal as a leader has to be that the team will come back with things you didn't expect. Otherwise, why did you get them to do the work in the first, mm-hmm, place? If you already knew the answer, why didn't you just produce it?
Yeah, right? Yeah. But I like this one question that Kavish is asking. He's asking, how can a company create a culture of asking great questions where everyone is appreciated for doing this? And so I think you're talking a lot about modeling that and truly authentically needing it, requiring it as a leader. But how do you encourage, I think we've had some other great questions in here about the, it can be the junior or not the leaders asking the question.
One of the best situations for doing it is group feedback sessions, or group crits, as we would call them in design school. Mm-hmm. I went to design school, and there's this ritual that you go through, which is frightening but incredibly effective, which is at the end of your project, you pin all of your work up on the wall. This was before digital. I'm so old that we used to still pin things up on the wall. Peers and the professors would sit around and criticize your work. Always the best experiences of that, at least for me, were when people asked good questions. They didn't say, I hate your work, or I think it's brilliant, or here's my idea. None of those responses were very useful. But when they asked you a question about, did you think about this, or how did you get to where you got to, or whatever that caused you to think more deeply, that was incredibly valuable. The other thing that comes out of those group situations is it's a chance for the culture to practice being non-hierarchical, right? Mm-hmm. So the other thing that happened is that the best professors did not impose their will on the group. They encouraged the students and professors and anybody else who was in the room to share feedback, because they were practicing this idea that it was that everybody's point of view was valuable. You can do that as a leader too. And those situations, they're very hard. You have to lose a lot of your, you know, general practices of kind of being the biggest voice or the loudest voice in the room, but it's a great situation to put yourself in. So I would encourage people to do kind of group reviews, group feedback of creative work.
And then bite your tongue every time you want to come in with an answer, exactly, and turn it into a
question.
And
you will make mistakes, mm-hmm, and you will kick yourself because you mm-hmm jumped in at a moment where you shouldn't have done. And I do that still after doing this for 35 years, but it is great practice.
Yeah. I think that's wonderful. So really putting thoughtfulness into curating and designing that session so that there are room for many voices.
Yes, and bring cookies or beer.
That always helps. One of the things that we're also getting a lot of questions about is what happens when you ask a question and then people come forth with ideas and you've based on your experience, feel that some of those ideas are not necessarily going the right direction. How do you practice feedback and still stay in the mindset of curiosity and questions?
Well, it's a little bit touching on what we were just talking about. I think you can frame questions that cause the team to look differently at their own ideas. And that is always more effective than telling them that their ideas are too small or they're the wrong ideas.
Right? Yeah. Give me an example of this.
So a good example might be, so a team comes with a solution, you know, they've got this solution for this. Set of users, and your intuition about the idea is it's too narrow, or it's a little bit. Then a question you might ask might be, well, how did you consider this other group of users that we might think about, how do we think about what this might mean if we're talking about an international market, for instance? And as soon as you do that, that you're asking the team to broaden their thinking about the idea, and you know, one of two things can happen. One is they can actually have thought about it, in which case the idea gets bigger anyway, which is good. Or they have not thought about it, and then they have to kind of think about, go away and reconsider their ideas a little bit. Maybe they come with a broader set of ideas. So questions are actually very useful when it comes to directing teams, because you're asking them to engage in the learning that they've already gone through, mm-hmm, and in some cases asking them to go do some more learning.
Nice. And then it becomes theirs as well, instead of just your idea. It's
most of us in most of these situations, even if we have lots of authority, and most of the time, to be honest, we don't, even if we do, teams just don't listen if you just tell them something. I mean, why should they? They've just spent weeks or days or whatever investing everything they have in their idea. And the last thing that they want to hear is, I don't like your idea, or I think I've got a better idea.
How do we ask questions to our leaders? So where is there somebody that you're working with or people that you're working with where you feel like they're engaging you and helping you shift your curiosity because they're asking you questions?
I have a reputation for being a fairly sort of like strong-willed person about ideas. I mean, not necessarily about other things, but about ideas. I love them. And so I think that I struggle with a lot of these issues myself. Right? And many of the colleagues who I respect most and love working with, including you, are really good at asking me questions that get me to think differently, right? In a way that's not threatening and not combative, and nor are they overly kind of, you know, they don't bow to any sense of hierarchy, whether it exists or not. They're actually peer level, intellectually interesting, appropriate, and insightful questions. Right. And
so engaging you as a thought leader.
Exactly. In a thought equal. Mm-hmm. Right. And that, I know that can be hard to do, but I love working with people that do that. And I think most leaders do. I mean, there are some that are so insecure, they can't handle it. And to be honest, if you have a leader like that, then you have to manage them.
Yeah.
There's no other way, right? And we've all learned to manage leaders who are totally, and all leaders are insecure at some moments, so one has to be aware of it. But I think if leaders have got reasonable levels of a sense of their own worth and security, they can handle it, and it's by far the best way to get the most out of them in my view.
Yeah, I've definitely found that when you're working with a leader who maybe is a little bit less secure and shies away from questions, that pairing questions with a heavy dose of evidence up front can be incredibly helpful. So if you walk in with some evidence and then say, that's why I'm asking this question, it's not just, I think sometimes leaders will be, when you're just poking too much, that can make people feel unstable.
Yes, and there is a form of question which one has to be thoughtful about, which is either really is or implies it's a question about your own, about the other person's effectiveness, worth, you know, skill level, whatever. Those are bad questions to put into this. I mean, they never work very well, right? I mean, unless you're in a review where actually it's being asked for. And so one has to be thoughtful about the way one poses questions so that they're about the thing that you're studying, the problem, the idea, the people that you're trying to help, and not about the relationship you have with the person or what you think of them.
Their values.
Right.
Values,
as soon as you tread into that territory, the questions become no better than any other way of achieving anything. I mean, they're very dangerous. And so you have to be thoughtful enough and empathic enough to know if you're treading a bit close to that. So it's important. It's one of the reasons why I think as designers, we have an advantage when it comes to our relationships with other leaders or other our colleagues, is that we are always talking about helping other people, right? We're trying to solve a problem for other people.
Yeah.
And we can talk about them instead of talking about each other.
And that's a common way to enter into the question.
Exactly. And you can provide evidence about them and data about them. It's why the research piece is so useful. It's so important. It's important to discover what the needs are, but it's also important because it gives you some people to help instead of worrying about whether I like the idea more or you like the idea more. No, it's actually we care about whether they like the idea more.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Tim. Thank you to our community, the conversation. We love it. If you'd like to hear more from Tim, we are running his course on Leading for Creativity. And it's a place where we're hoping people can practice not only asking questions to provoke others and bring about larger points of view, but really practice what it means to be a creative leader in the modern workplace. So thanks to everyone for joining us today, and we'll see you again soon.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Creative Confidence from IDEO-U. Stay up to date on our Creative Confidence conversations and send your questions for our upcoming guests. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram, and sign up for our IDEO-U newsletter at IDEO-U.com/CC. Thanks for joining us.